ready for more white belts in life, give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. So far, okay. The gremlins have not done as much damage as they typically do. No, so far, so good.
We have not been besmirched.
Besmirched.
By the gremlins.
Or besmurfed by smurf-like creatures.
Have you seen gremlins? They're a little bit bigger.
Ah, now you're low. There you go. The fucking gremlins. There you are.
Fucking gremlins. They are out to get us. As always. Have you heard about there's this Twitter account called the Institute for Gremlins 2 Research. And it's basically just like gives further and further evidence to support the belief that Gremlins 2 is just the greatest piece of fiction that has ever been made or developed by mankind.
I did not know that existed. Oh,
I knew it existed because they followed me after I made a tweet about everybody talks about Die Hard being a Christmas movie, but nobody really mentions Gremlins.
That's true.
That's like the whole crux of Gremlins. It's Christmas.
I'm immediately, our audio balls just dropped. That's why I went, ooh.
Okay.
It's very tinny. You probably even like heard it through my headphones from over there.
I can't hear.
Okay.
A little bit. I picked up on some of it just now, but.
But anyways, sorry to cut you off. I had both headphones on. And my sense of reality is shifted.
Yeah. No,
my sense of reality has been shifted in general, but especially so when I have these headphones on. But,
yeah, we're trying to keep it together over there.
Yeah, trying. So far, so good. We're 1:50 in, and so far, no mental breakdowns. I like this. Yes,
that's pretty good so far.
Well, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life, isn't it? So, of all places, is this not
exactly.
The place?
Exactly. Find your true will, Corey.
My true will. But we should start off with a fight song. No one likes us.
We don't care.
We're from Philly, fucking Philly. No one likes us. We don't care.
Hey, my cousin Gary owes me like $40. If I can get that back sometime, I really would appreciate it.
It was an homage to our boy Jason Kelce. And I think that was probably up there. I think Chase Utley is probably like the gold standard for
world fucking champions.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can beat that, but Jason Kelce sure as fuck tried, man. He tried real hard.
He did.
The outfit may have actually won him that battle.
Full mummer sultan mode. Like that.
See, that's the thing. Most people who don't live in Philly don't understand that he was not dressed as a sultan.
He was, though.
He was. But he wasn't doing it because he wanted to give an homage to sultans, wherever they may be nowadays. Yeah. It was an homage to the mummers, which is an organization that I really don't understand. Perhaps you could explain them to
they
me.
They like to...
I know they're racist, right?
Yes, they like parades.
Fair.
I mean, this was after the parade, so it makes sense for him to dress as a mummer.
This is true. Yes, they like New Year's. It's their favorite holiday.
They pretty much only New Year's. They also like to drink in the streets and pee on people's front steps. So I don't know why we haven't labeled the mummers a terrorist organization in Philadelphia yet. But it should definitely be on the agenda in the next somewhere in the near future.
So, like, is one born a mummer?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
You can be born into mummerhood, mummership.
Mummership. Mummerhood.
Do you have mummership in the mummer?
I like mummerhood.
I don't know. No, because I know like it very much is like a generational family thing.
Okay.
From my understanding, like people do like when I was in middle school, there was a kid who his family was all mummers. Yeah. So like for like career day or one of those days where like you learn about different people's cultures.
He wanted
cultures.
To be a mummer.
Yeah, his learn about our culture thing was the mummers. It's just kind of backhanded in a way. Because I'm pretty sure that was like the same year that the mummers got super racist.
Is it kind of just like the like a lesser, more regional version of the Freemasons in a way?
Yeah, but like I don't think you get like secret access to shit throughout the year. Like, I think you're pretty much, I think the only time you get any, you get to reap the benefits of mummerhood is New Year's.
Okay.
Like New Year's Day specifically. Not even like New Year's Eve. You can't like get into a club by saying you're a mummer.
Yeah, there's no like that. Membership card.
Yeah. Plus, like, well, I mean, there could be a mummership card. I don't know for sure.
We should get a mummer on here. I think my uncle was a mummer.
I think Jimmy is a mummer.
Really?
Our good old buddy Jimmy Viola, a.k.a. the necrosexual.
Friend of the show, Jimmy Viola?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he, because I remember he was in the parade as a lobster one year when they did lobsters. They've really had to like scale it back from all the blackface.
Yeah. So, how does one become a mummer? Like if you and I set out today to become mummers.
If we tried to become mummers, we would have to win the Super Bowl and be in a parade and then give a speech, probably a drunken speech if I interpreted the way. I don't know how, if Jason Kelce likes to drink or if he's just been hit in the head a few too many times.
Both of those things are true.
I think somewhere in the middle is the truth. Outside of that, like, yeah, like I only know like being born in it. I think maybe like if you just join, like walk into the parade,
you're a mummer,
and like act like you belong and just like follow them, that's how you get in. Like,
could
I think
we corner Jimmy and really get like the what
we should
find out how many puppies he had to kill or whatever it is?
We have to lure. How do you lure mummers?
Well, we know. I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. He's going to know it's coming.
You got to. I think you lure mummers by counting down to midnight and setting off fireworks. I think that's the secret.
Why are they racist, though? Why are they trying to imitate black people? Why are they trying to do blackface?
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, it's white people who are like, you know, I'm not racist, but here's a bunch of stereotypes that I believe are fact. Like one of those kind of things. Like,
but I'm not racist. No, sir.
No, I'm not racist, but, you know, those Muslims I'm not a fan of.
I remember that there is this kid who I went to high school with who was very public about the fact that he was racist.
Nice.
Like, way to go, kid. But he always used to brag that his dad was in the KKK. And I was just like, I was like the first one to call his bullshit. I was like, dude, no, like that doesn't exist. Like you can't just go. And I was like, how do you join? All right. Like how did he enroll in the KKK?
I think you're born into it.
And he's like, oh, they have a website. That was an example.
That was his.
He's like, he just went to the website. So I was like, he enrolled in the KKK as you do like Netflix.
He joined the newsletter.
And, like, by the way, you know what that website was? The FBI. That's what it was.
Yeah. www.kkk.gov.
www.wwefg. I don't want to get sued. So that I wasn't referencing.
.geocities.com. That would be another dream guest is James Adomian.
But not, I hate to say this, but like not James Adomian. I would love to have James Adomian.
I would like James Adomian and friends.
Yes. And he would, if he could somehow like sit in and then interview, like participate in the interview of himself being
Jesse Ventura.
Yes. You see what I'm doing? What I'm doing is I'm tracking them all the way down to Appomattox. I've got the beginnings there. I gotta get lower. I gotta get down here.
You gotta put that microphone all the way back to your uvula.
You gotta deep throat that microphone.
They always said it in Opie and Anthony. They're like, the way they would describe him is he sounds like he has a little bit of a load in his mouth. This is a little bit of load.
I fucking miss that show, man. Like, I know they hated each other, and there was no way it could have continued in any way, shape, or form, but goddamn, they were so good together.
Yeah, well, they were great together, but it was also, like, it was a perfect storm of, like, the talent that they had on.
Yeah, the rotating crew.
Yeah.
I was listening to Stern earlier today, too. I've kind of been on a kick of listening to him again, and there's just something about that guy, man. He just owns a radio show like no one else ever has or probably ever will.
Yeah.
Like he just always, there's always a flow to the show. Like there's never, any awkwardness. There's never any... I mean, you could argue that it's not interesting. If you're not a fan of his, you're not going to find it interesting anyways, but you can still appreciate just the tempo that he keeps. And,
yeah.
You know, it's very organized. It's very... And it's also really kind of like the perfect realization of an old school and dying art form.
Yeah.
You know, terrestrial radio was a thing. And he was largely... I mean, inarguably, the biggest figurehead within that sphere that ever existed. Yeah.
Everyone since is just a pale imitation of him.
Yeah, and
like your local show, like you get plenty of even on like sports radio. There's guys who like try to be kind of the shock jock type, like to have the hot takes and like start feuds with other shows. I forget there was a guy here in Philly a few years ago,
Josh
like,
Innes.
Yes, that yeah. fucking dweeb.
See, I actually thought he was very good. I thought he was very talented. I think he barked up the wrong trees a few times, but
yeah.
he knew what he was doing. I just think he's not... He, for as smart as he is, I don't know why he was so stuck within the idea of doing radio. Like, he's a guy who should just get a job for one of these, like, big... If he wants to do sports, like, go get a job for The Ringer or something and just do a podcast there.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't understand why he's...
He could be kind of not necessarily ahead of the curve, but he's behind the curve currently. Like he's kind of chasing, yeah, like you said, barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah,
that seems to be a theme with this guy.
Yeah, I just think that he's really good at what he does, and I think when I used to listen to him, just because frankly he was the only reason to listen to Philly
YFP.
Sports talk radio for a while there.
Not Angelo Cataldi.
Well, when sports are good in the city, it's very easy to listen to sports radio because it's just a confirmation bias, basically. Yeah. You're just like,
Pretty much.
I want to hear how great my teams are. Let's turn on the radio.
Yeah.
So that makes it a little bit more pleasant of an experience overall. But I think that, you know, when I was listening a few years ago, when he was here, the sports sucked. It was like the worst period of sports ever. The Phillies were literally the worst team in the league. The Flyers were average to the point where they weren't even worth mentioning. The Eagles.
Go Fly Guys.
Had just fired their coach. They had just fired Chip Kelly. And even when he was there, he wasn't working out super hot.
Which is funny that Chip Kelly saw so much potential in Nick Foles, and little did he know.
Big Dick Nick, everybody.
Big Dick Nick.
I ask
it took
anybody.
Big Dick Doug to really
big
to
balls
fully realize
Doug.
That.
Doug's
potential.
Got the balls. Nick's got the dick. I think that's a T-shirt. First T-shirt.
Doug's got the ball. Oh my God, that could be the first White Belt of Life T-shirt.
Doug's got the balls. You know, Nick's got the dick.
We definitely missed the boat on selling those T-shirts, but they would have been awesome to have.
Well. There's a lot of interesting... I'm very interested overall in the Eagles, and unfortunately, I was almost a little bit sad when the Eagles won the Super Bowl because I felt like I was on this roller coaster ride of the journey to Philly winning its first Super Bowl. Yeah. And I was describing this to my girlfriend a few weeks back and why I like sports, because I don't like that I like sports. Yeah. Like, I understand when people think of a sports fan... Short of obviously, fan is short for fanatic, and you think about like the drunk South Philly guy on the subway stop singing the Eagles fight song with piss in his pants.
Yeah,
like I understand that's what people think of when they think sports fan, and there is something a little, you know, a lot of sports fans that people think of sort of collectively is kind of how I think about like NASCAR fans.
Yes,
you know, just
yeah, but especially when it comes to Philly, like when it comes to Philly sports fans, like that's we are the NASCAR fans of the NFL.
Yes, and one of the things that I think the reason I've thought a lot about this that I like sports is because I do have a real appreciation for competition. And have a real appreciation for sort of like the competition between organizations.
Yeah.
Like the beautiful thing about the NFL is that there's a salary cap.
Yeah.
Everybody has the exact same resources available to them.
Yeah.
So how are you going to configure the recipe using... It's almost like sending a whole bunch of chefs into a kitchen with the... They all have the same ingredients. And you give them absolutely no guidance. You just say, make something good.
Yeah.
And they come out and, you know, somebody basically makes porridge and another person has fra diavolo or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's that in and of itself is why I enjoy sports. I love the competition. I love the organizational part of it. You know, putting the right people in place. For example, looking at the Philadelphia Eagles, they went through this phase where they hired Chip Kelly to be their head coach.
Yeah.
And the reason they hired Chip Kelly to be their head coach is because Jeffrey Lurie is a very liberal guy. He's a free-thinking guy, sort of a progressive by nature. He saw Chip Kelly, who is all of these things as well. Chip Kelly was an intellectual in sports, and that's rare. There is a lot of old-school gym teacher type of coaching and people within sports, whistle, sweatpants, you know, trucker hat with their team's logo on it. Like, there's a lot of those guys in sports. And if you were to go up to them and say, hey, coach, hey, general manager person, why do you do things the way that you do things?
Yeah.
And they would answer, well, that's just the way it's done. And it's always been done that way, goddammit. It's the way my coach taught me and his coach taught him and blah, 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 blah.
And by God, that's how every coach shall do it.
So Chip Kelly was this rare dude. So he comes up and says, I think that that's a shitty answer. Like, that was the fundamental quality of Chip Kelly that was so appealing, is that he was a guy who said, I'm not going to do things the way they've always been done.
Yeah.
Just because that's the way they've been done. I'm going to do things the way that I think is best, which is essentially saying you're going to innovate.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of innovation that goes on in sports. Every now and again, you get a couple of characters. In basketball, there's this guy, Daryl Morey, who's largely responsible for the introduction of things called analytics into basketball. So, for example, Daryl Morey within basketball, he was in a relatively small market team. He worked for the Houston Rockets, which is not a small market, you know, economically, but it's a small market in terms of, you know, I don't think LeBron James is hot to trot. Like, no star athlete is going to go to Houston. They're not New York. They're not Boston. They're not Chicago. They're not Los Angeles.
Yeah.
They're not a destination for young mid-20s, early-30s athletes in the primes of their lives.
Yeah.
You're not gonna go to Houston.
No.
So he said, what is one of the fundamental tenets of winning championships in the NBA? And what he found is that one of the fundamental qualities was having superstar players, Hall of Fame-level players. There's only five people
That's how you have a good team?
Well, no, but that's the thing, is think about the Eagles. How many Hall of Famers did they have on that team? Maybe one or two, right? Football is largely a team game, whereas basketball is a little bit more of, it's still a team game for sure, but individuals can dominate because there's only five people on the floor.
Yeah.
And because everybody is largely playing the same game, obviously there's different positions within basketball.
Yeah.
But LeBron James is so many deviations better than the people around him.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case in football, with the exception of maybe like a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning.
Well, football is a sport where the entire lineup of the team changes every
plan and you know, in basketball obviously you game plan too, but
It's a lot more akin to almost you can almost compare it to like a Warcraft or something like that, where you have different unit types that fulfill different roles, and because you got the big guys and then you got the little fast guys and then you got the throwing guy and then you got like the close guy and then you got the far guy. Like
athleticism and skill can just completely take over a basketball game.
Yeah.
Where you can't really in football. Yeah. It's just there's 11 guys on the team. It really is the ultimate team sport.
Yeah, even playing like just street ball. Like you get a bunch of people together and there's one kid on the other team who's just miles better than everyone else there. Everyone on his team is getting the ball to him as quick as they can.
Yes.
Like, he's the one who's going to kick your ass.
And what Daryl Morey, this bastard, and I will somehow tie this back to the Eagles.
Yeah, this has got really far.
The thing that this Daryl Morey gentleman decided was, well, how do I get star players to come to the Houston Rockets? And the answer was the draft. You can't rely upon free agency. You have to draft these guys because then you control their rights for 4 to 5 years. It's the only way to get these guys here.
Yeah.
And you have cheap labor for a long time, you know? Because you control a guy for 4 to 5 years when you draft him. And then, obviously, when he's young. You're not going to be making... They get their big contracts after they're done with their rookie contract. That second contract is when these guys really bring home, you know, the big bucks.
Yeah.
So what he did was he tanked. He started this idea of tanking and accumulating assets.
Trust the process.
Yeah. Acknowledge that you're not going to win the title this year. And if you're not going to win the title this year, how can we make the best use of this season? Acquire assets, lose games, get higher in the draft. And then it was really taken to an extreme by Sam Hinkie of Philadelphia folklore. One of my, we talked about dream guests on the podcast. He's up there.
Yeah.
But tying this back to Chip Kelly, Chip Kelly was that guy in the sport of football. But the problem is, number one, I don't think football can be innovated that much. And if it can, I don't think the coach is the way to do that. Yeah. I think what we learned with the Eagles is they hired a guy in Doug Peterson who is objectively not as intelligent as Chip Kelly. Yeah. Chip Kelly's IQ is 100-something. Doug Peterson's IQ is that minus 30 points. He's not a dumb guy. I'm not saying he's an idiot.
No, but he's not yet.
But
you kind of look at him, he's got an aloofness to his face.
Yeah, he's not an intellectual in the way that... Now, he's a hell of a football coach, apparently. Yeah. And I'm not... Again, not saying he's a non-intelligent person, but I think Chip Kelly was a real intellectual. I mean, this was a guy who was obsessed with the game and obsessed with innovating the game, but he had the wrong job. I know that sounds weird, but you know, Chip Kelly as a coach, there's a personal sort of relationship factor to a coach. You have to understand how to work with people, and he was a little bit more of that maniacal mad scientist who wanted to touch and influence all parts of the organization.
Now, he was GM for like a minute, right?
Exactly.
And he realized that was a terrible idea because he's not that good.
You can have that guy in your organization, but you would rather him be in the front office where he doesn't have to be talking with the players and appealing to the players day in and day out.
Yeah.
So Howie Roseman was the guy who lost that power struggle with Chip Kelly. He gets re-promoted, in essence, to the general manager, does an amazing job assembling talent. The rest is history.
Yeah.
So I really do think, I don't even remember at this point how we got on the topic
really,
of Chip Kelly.
I don't know.
I was talking
about the transition from Chip Kelly to Doug Peterson.
I was talking about why I'm a sports fan. And like that little soliloquy I just went on is why I'm a sportsman. Those are the things I'm observing and looking at, not necessarily just, you know, who
you're
has
gonna be
smarts.
Great at coaching your kids' high school football team.
Thank
it's
you.
It's going to be awesome.
But yeah, they
really, really apply to that school. Let them know.
Hold on one second.
That's more like it.
Yes. And that's fitting that I unpaused it right there, because I unpaused it precisely when you started going, that's more like it.
Yeah, it is. There we go.
Have you noticed any excessive? I feel like since it's the week after, the Super Bowl sort of craze has worn off a bit. But have you noticed any good stories? Now, you worked during.
Yeah, no, I worked at a couple sports bars, one for the during the actual Super Bowl itself. Another one during the parade for the Super Bowl, both of which the actual Super Bowl itself wasn't terrible. I got there at 1 o'clock. They had been packed since 8 a.m. There were people lined up outside to get in before the manager even got there. I actually found out the manager told me like they had made $4,000 in Bud Light bottles alone.
Wow.
By like 2:30. Game hadn't even started yet, and they made their money for the day.
It's a lot of dilly-dilly.
Yeah. That is a lot. It was actually funny because I wound up, the company that I work for, I found out that another Philly comic by the name of Chris Cotton also works for that company. So he was there. We were both there on the same day. It was more crowd control than anything else, but like as the game gets going, like everybody's focused on that.
Yeah.
Like, we kicked guys out because we thought they were smoking weed. But we couldn't prove it. Like they either they had a vape or it was weed smoke that was coming from somewhere else that was just like seeping into the building and you just could smell it. So those guys, even the guys we kicked out, wound up coming back in.
I saw a porta potty overflow. That was good.
Yeah, I didn't get into all that madness. But Yeah, like after the game, honestly, when I like watching the game, they're at, because I haven't, like, I'm not a huge football fan. I didn't watch a single game this season. Like, the Super Bowl was literally the first game I watched.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And it really, I really didn't think they were going to be able to do it. I thought, like, it's just not, like, I think the, I thought the potential was there, but I thought, like, until Carson Wentz is in the driver's seat, like, they're not ready. Like, they're not there. It's going to be, like, another year or two before they can get to that point. And it wasn't until literally that the touchdown that Foles ran in where I was like, holy shit.
The Philly special?
Yeah. Holy shit.
Did you see how he called that play, by the way?
No, what happened?
He went up to the coach. He goes, Philly, Philly. Bud Light was, no one was happier with the Eagles Super Bowl win than was Bud Light.
See, that just makes it sound like it was orchestrated.
Maybe. Hey, I'm okay. If Bud Light orchestrated, then I will,
Bud
I don't
Light
drink anymore, but I might.
Bud Light,
and I will have me
a
Bud Light.
City that they're willing to give free Bud Light to.
Yes.
And that's how the Super Bowl is determined, by who Bud Light wants to give free booze.
It's one of those things, too. It's such an empty. Did you see anybody giving out free Bud Lights?
Yeah, that was the day of the parade. They had
that
tokens.
Actually was a thing?
Yeah, no. You had to. They had reps at different bars. You had to go to certain bars, and you would have the reps would have like the almost like poker chips. You'd have to get those from the reps, and I don't know what process you went through to get them, and then you could give them to the bar, but you only got one. Like, everybody got one.
Was it like a little 8-ouncer, or was it like a full?
I mean, it was like that aluminum bottle can thing they do now. So
that's probably
like
12 ounces,
yeah,
right?
12, 16-ounce, whatever.
That's a decent amount of beer.
Actually, one of the reps gave me like a handful of them before he left, because they had to stop giving them out.
Really?
They like ran out of free Bud Light to give people.
That's hilarious.
Like, they like ran out. Like,
I was wondering.
I only worked like a 1-to-6 shift for the parade.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until like the Super Bowl, I actually lucked out, because like as soon as the game was over, Cotton's like, yo, we're going to get everybody out of here. Shove them out the door. We're locking up. That's it. We got out of work. I figured we'd be there till 2, and we'd be like fighting off the droves of maniacs roaming the streets after they won. But everybody, like 90% of the people in the bar, closed their tabs before the game was over, because they already, like, they could feel it coming, so they knew they wanted to be in the streets.
Yes.
So by the time like the game was over and everything was set, like, we literally just like shoot everyone out the door, bar started pouring up shots for everybody, and locked up. It was great.
It was really cool to be here, you know, because since I was I'm a lifelong Eagles fan. My dad, actually, like a lot of people get into a sports team because their father is a fan of a sports team. My dad was never an Eagles fan.
Really?
No. He was like a passive fan of football. I don't think he disliked the Eagles.
Yeah, but he didn't have that connection that a lot of people
did. Yeah, he kind of didn't really have a favorite team. I guess if you put a gun to his head and said to pick one, he might have said the Eagles. I don't really know, but he wasn't like a super passionate fan or anything. I remember I got a little, like, that stereotypical toddler, like, pretend football outfit with, like, the T-shirt and the plastic helmet.
Yep. Yeah.
And it was an Eagles one. I think maybe that's where it came from, but honest to goodness, I could not tell you why.
You thought you were on the team. That's why.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you why I'm an Eagles fan. It was almost like maybe it's, like, just my anxiety revealing itself. Just, no, you have to be an Eagles fan. There's no way. Come on, you can't be a Patriots fan. Life's too easy. You got to take the hard route here, man.
Yeah. Where are we going to get our Rocky story if we don't? I literally had the Rocky theme stuck in my head like all of last week.
It's a problem with the city of Philly, though. They always call themselves, like, at some point, isn't it the goal to no longer be the underdog?
Yeah, but now everybody's going to rally behind all the white people will rally behind the Flyers, and all the black people will rally behind the Sixers, and neither team will ever really do that great for another 10 to 15 years. And then, like, it's like, you know, we kind of still maintain that.
Yeah.
Just not in football.
It also taught me
baseball. Phillies are probably going to suck for a little while longer.
It's a dying sport.
Yeah.
Like, you won't even see if the Phillies won the World Series again, like nowadays, you wouldn't see half the people that you probably saw for the Eagles parade, because baseball is such an irrelevant sport at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to talk about a sport that wasn't built for the information age, It is baseball. Because it's just, it's too boring. I think actually one of the only ways that baseball will be able to exist in the future is if they turn itself into more of like a live event. Like basically make baseball like going to the bar. You know, let's make it like
Isn't
a party.
Kind of already like that.
It is, but they need to double down on that, because once the older generation dies off,
yeah, baseball, yeah, the America's pastime thing is.
Do you know a baseball fan in your personal age group?
Like a hardcore baseball fan?
Yes.
No.
How many hardcore football fans do you know?
More than I am comfortable with.
Dozens, dozens, and you don't know a single hardcore baseball fan.
Yeah.
So it's because the age demographic who's watching baseball is, you know, Gen Xers and baby boomers.
Yeah. I feel like we both know people who like played baseball who don't even really give a shit about baseball. Like
I wish I played fucking baseball. Just sit around, be like the first baseman.
Yeah.
Every now and again.
Talk about the least impressive athletes in professional sports.
Although I will say hitting a ball with a bat is the hardest thing in sports.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it certainly is athletic, but it's not like the athleticism. It's more just a coordination thing. Yeah. It just, and the vision specifically that's required. Yeah. I remember watching an episode of Sports Science where they talked about like the average MLB hitters. It's almost like, you know, fighter jets, right? If you're going to fly a jet, you have to have this exceptional vision.
Yeah.
Same thing rings true for baseball players. Like you don't see a lot of baseball players with less than like 20/10. Because you have to see that ball coming.
No, I mean, that makes sense. But I feel like in most professional sports, like, you can't have shitty vision.
You'll see some football players, you know, that wearing contacts, or you'll see basketball players wearing contacts, but not a whole lot in baseball.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
My vision sucks.
Still, but, like, if you look at the current Phillies lineup, like, if you took the hat off of those guys, you wouldn't think any one of them plays any sport whatsoever.
No.
Like, they all just have that constant, like, they're all doughy, got some double chin action, they got, like, that weird catfish mustache where, like, it doesn't fill in the middle and, like, just kind of hangs off the cheeks. This is really uncomfortable.
Latin.
Well, that, too, but we import.
Not that Latin people aren't athletic, but it's a predominantly Latin sport.
They're just
really
good at baseball.
Yeah, it's predominantly a Latin sport at this point. If you were to say, like, what is the ethnicity that is most represented within baseball, it's probably at this point Latin Americans.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, another reason, you know, why perhaps, like, people, you would think that with the browning of America, that would actually, you know, help
the browning baseball of America.
Yeah, with the increase of, no, that's actually like a political term, I believe.
I don't doubt that you didn't come up with it, but it's just not something I expected to hear today.
The increase of basically people who aren't white.
Yes, no, I get what it means.
In baseball, you know, since you now see so many more people from other ethnicities represented, you think that would attract people to that sport more, but even that doesn't seem to be working that well.
Nah,
it's boring.
Nah,
it's just when the thing is boring, it's hard to escape that.
Well, because like how many people back home where these people, like in Honduras or wherever they pull these players from, have cable TV to watch baseball versus like how many of them were just playing baseball in fields until one day somebody from America said, "Come with me, young man. We'll teach you to play in the big leagues."
Did you, were you around for the Phillies parade?
I was, yeah. No, I remember taking off because I was in high school at the time, like, missing a day of school to go to the actual parade.
What one seemed more populated?
Okay, so I feel like there was more sprawl for the Eagles parade. Mm. It felt like it was spread over a wider area, at least from my I was at City Hall for the Phillies parade, which was like jam packed right there and like kind of up Broad Street to that point.
Yeah.
But the Eagles parade was so spread out, I didn't actually get to go to the parade proper. So I didn't really see what that looked like. But just like trying to get through the city, like even on a bike was almost futile. Like you had to walk pretty much everywhere.
They said only 700,000 people were in attendance.
I feel like that count isn't necessarily accurate.
Yeah, how do you count that, number one? Yeah. And number two, I also read an article that said that a lot of these sports parade attendance numbers are inflated.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, you probably couldn't fit more than 700,000 people.
Yeah.
Where the actual parade proper was being held. That's max capacity.
Yeah. Plus the same thing kind of happened at the bar I worked during the parade that happened on the Super Bowl. People got there at 7 a.m. and were there all day. Like yes. it was packed to the gills as soon as I showed up. Like there were these, the two guys at the door would say, "Hey, you're here to back us up." I was the big guy of the bouncing team at that group. I'm not the big guy in like any room that's not full of toddlers.
Guy.
Yeah. I should not be the muscle in any circumstance like that.
Come on, man. You're a strength coach, a trainer.
Yeah.
Do I need to play the Mark Rippetoe audio of the importance of barbell coaching to you?
Yeah. Mark Rippetoe also says that the grown adult male weighs at least 200 pounds.
You're not male. According to Mark Rippetoe, you're something else.
I'm not an adult.
You have a you must be assigned a preferred pronoun in the world of Mark Rippetoe. Mark Rippetoe. I think our first YouTube series should be Coach Rippetoe. Coaching the lifts. Like make
coaching
that, like, with a
coaching N. With an apostrophe.
Yes,
yeah.
And an apostrophe.
Coaching
the lifts. LIFFS.
Lifts. Coaching the lifts.
What an idea. Look at this live brainstorming session with the wonderful idea.
I think that's my favorite part of this podcast is the people get to see the actual process of how we grow this brand.
Well, YouTube is definitely something that we've thought a lot about and have tried to get involved with in the past.
Involved with through our good friend Joey Zatmary.
Yes, sir. The Lion's Den.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I think is going to eventually, you know, podcasting is largely going to replace what say it is what it is. Like TV is kind of the primary visual entertainment medium. The radio for a long time was the primary audio entertainment medium.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real argument that number one, radio already isn't any longer the primary audio. I think it's being replaced with podcasting.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think we're living through that right now. And then in addition to that, I think that YouTube and things like it, but YouTube obviously just because it's been around the longest and is owned by the biggest and best company,
yeah,
is probably something that's going to replace television.
Yeah, no, YouTube and streaming services are going to run the market in terms of audio video content.
Yes. And
I think people have kind of gone back and forth about whether or not theaters will ever die out.
I don't think they will.
I don't think they ever will, just because the actual going to,
because no one has a problem with it. That's why people had a problem with other things. Like people really started to hate their cable bills, and that is when slowly but surely, and it was a monopoly, right? I mean, the Comcast of the world, the Time Warners of the world, they just got to the point where these companies were so big and so powerful, and they cared so little about each individual's business because they had already so much that they were able to give, frankly, just subpar experiences. And I think actually that is what kind of spurned a lot of this audio in it, or a visual innovation in terms of replacing television.
Yeah.
Like cord cutting, that whole thing, you know, it's a phenomenon nowadays. And I think that with radio, it was largely the same thing. Like people wanted to, number one, they thought it was weird that you have to take a commercial break every 30, because we're talking about Stern mastering the medium of radio.
Yeah.
Radio is that you got to keep them interested because you've got a whole new audience every 10 to 15 minutes. That's why he keeps the tempo that he does.
It needs to be something that they can just, like, off the bat, like, what the fuck are they talking about? What's going on here?
Yes, I want to listen. Turn up the dial.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that the entire medium was constructed to try and coax in. Whereas now with podcasting, I mean, even the biggest ones in the world, Rogan, he reads his ads up front, and it's 3 hours of uninterrupted conversation. That's just better.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's just better.
Although, come back to that same thing. Streaming services, as even YouTube, is starting to show ads in the actual throughout the videos. Like you're never really truly going to get away from commercials.
I pay for YouTube,
eating up your time.
I pay the $8 a month or whatever it is for a YouTuber ad.
Do you have Hulu?
No.
Hulu's got ads all over it.
Really?
Hulu's got ads telling you that you have an ad blocker on and you should turn it off. Even if you don't have an ad blocker on, they just automatically slip that in there.
Well, with YouTube too, it continued to be like, what's the next thing to fall? Like, for example, getting notifications was huge in YouTube. I think it's amazing, right? Because like, once YouTube is able to develop a good push notification technology, if Joey Zatmary makes a new video, boom. It's right on my phone, right there.
Yeah.
What's the difference between him and a television show? If he produces two videos a week, each 15 minutes, it's a half hour. What's the difference between him and somebody who used to have all once a week half hour show on Spike?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, in their heyday, these channels had hundreds of thousands, if not millions of viewers. But I would argue those eyes are now scanning YouTube.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, the TV guide of DirecTV.
Even like a lot of channels are now starting to adapt to that by like putting all of their content online. Like you can, if you pay for YouTube, you can watch Adult Swim. You have unlimited access to all of their shows.
Or I listen.
Which are in themselves little 15-minute bites.
I like watching Bill Maher once a week. I enjoy Bill Maher. I know a lot of people don't. I do.
I go back and forth.
I don't necessarily take his takes right to the bank and make them my own views, but I think he generally has an entertaining show. So yeah. I also grew up with him too, so it's a little sentimentality there, I suppose. But I don't even watch the show some weeks. I'll download the podcast and listen to it.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, what is necessary in terms of visual components of real time with Bill Maher? Nothing. It could be an audio show. Look at
ESPN. Yeah, I'm thinking. Sometimes the new rules.
Yeah,
sometimes new rules. You need to see that.
That is kind of the one awkward part, so that's a good call by you. Fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
I ruined it.
Look at ESPN. ESPN has all these studio shows like Around the Horn and Pardon the Interruption and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, they started releasing them in podcast form. And that's how I don't really consume those shows at all anymore. But when I do, it's in a podcast form. Or, you know, we talked before about Rogan breaking his show into YouTube clips. It's very common now that I won't even listen to a full show. I'll listen to some clips on YouTube and kind of piece together the show that way. So we just keep getting these more digestible and more digestible forms of these communication mediums. But long story short, yes, White Belts in Life YouTube channel en route. Now that I'm feeling good again.
Yeah.
Had a couple scary weeks there, right?
Yeah, you did. You did. Your blood sugar tried to kill you a couple times.
It did, man. That was scary.
I don't think it outright tried to kill you, but it let you know that it could.
Yes.
It reminded you that you were in fact mortal.
It showed me my mortality very clearly. yeah, it was a strange. I think if I were to assign what happened to me a description that was as short as it could be, I'd say that I had blood sugar problems reveal themselves due to very obvious things I was doing incorrectly, not eating well, failing to exercise as frequently as I had, frankly, my whole life.
Yeah.
Lots of different stuff. But I had an issue with hypoglycemia all of a sudden at a time when I also had a very stressful overall life. And that was a tricky confluence of events to have to endure. Because when you have blood sugar issues, it feels a lot like mental issues. Because it feels like you're in a video game when you're hypoglycemic. It feels like you're drunk. Imagine just all of a sudden, boom. With the snap of your fingers, you just feel drunk.
Yeah.
You know, like you're talking to me, but I can't really focus on what you're saying.
It's like in Call of Duty when you get shot like from behind and like, it doesn't kill you, but like everything goes black and white. And,
what
like,
an
analogy.
Yeah. That's in, you know, when you don't have a history of blood sugar issues, what do you think is happening to you? Holy shit, I'm going fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I'm having panic attacks. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And that was really frightening. And just not, you know, when your blood sugar is fucked up, your brain, that there's an intimate relationship between your stress response system, your blood sugar, and your brain. And when that whole axis gets a little dysregulated, it is very strange. And I think the weirdest thing for me was not feeling motivated. Because that's like, for me, the thing that always keeps me going.
Yeah.
Like, I was always a very motivated guy. And I always tell people, like, whenever I would have conversations with my friends and ask them, you know, what do you want to do with your life? Like, what's the real... I'm always that guy in, like, a casual conversation. It was like, hey, what do you do? Oh, I work at blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, that's what you do. But, like, what do you want to do? Like, what do you really... What makes you tick?
Yes.
Like, I'm always that guy in the conversation. And for whatever reason, I didn't... These last few weeks feel like I had that daydreaming ability. You know, I would think of things and be like, ah, that's not that great.
Yeah.
Why would I...
I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah. And I don't know. I've never had that. At least not that I can remember. So at least for a very long time, I haven't had that. And that was weird to have to endure and very uncomfortable. And that, you know, leads to the eventual just not depressive thoughts, but just kind of like, what's the point? Sucks.
No, you were like, even from that time, I remember you despised working out and anything that had to do with fitness.
Yes.
Anything that had to do with... you know what I'm tired of? Squats, benches, and deadlifts. Yeah. There's an exact quote that you said.
And like,
which is the most uncorey thing that has ever been said.
There's 26 years of evidence that I'm not interested in those things.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was very strange. I'm very happy to be on the tail end of it. But it was a tough fix. You know, it's when you look back at what happened to me and why I got in that, there was just a lot of circumstances. You know, I had a stressful job. I was in a really serious relationship for the first time. And that was just, you know, it was a tremendous relationship, but there's still just stress and being in your first one really.
And not knowing how to navigate things and not knowing how to really communicate what's going on.
And just being scared, parties. You know, it's just fear. Just like, oh my God, does she really like me?
Yeah.
You know, is she gonna leave me? And she didn't deserve any of those thoughts, but I still had them because it was all so fresh and so new to me.
Yeah.
And you know, my job is very strange. You know, it goes from being relatively relaxed and just plugging away in a computer, and then 5 minutes later you have someone who you've never met before in front of you, and you have to convert this person into a paid client in 1 hour.
Yeah. Give me X $100 a month.
Yes. That's a
Because I talked
gig.
Real nice to you.
And that's, you know, when you really start to look at what is stress and how does the response to it work, there's this hormone called cortisol. And I've convinced myself that I was basically, and my blood work confirms it, I was essentially in a cortisol bath for a while.
Yeah.
And I, you know, you got to get that puppy under control, man. And I think largely it was due to the terrible lifestyle factors. I hate to say it, but there is just something... I was on that summer vacation schedule where it seems like every now and again I would go to bed later and later and later and later. And I wouldn't go to bed before midnight ever. You know, like midnight was, I'd say the absolute, over the past year prior to the last few weeks, the absolute earliest that I would lay down and go to sleep was like 12:30, 1 o'clock. That would actually be early.
Yeah.
Like if I sat on the bed and began the process of going to bed at 12, I'd be like, shit, a little early tonight. And that is just not, there is also a relationship between productivity and happiness. And there was just no productivity to speak of.
Yeah.
And just the recipe for things, the blood sugar stuff caught me at a time where I wasn't doing a good job of handling all of the menu of options within my life.
Yeah. And then your body's working overtime to kind of like mellow you out. And
exactly.
You're draining your adrenaline glands.
Yes.
Slowly but surely.
Adrenal fatigue is a real thing. I actually don't have it according to my blood work. Adrenal fatigue is usually when you have low cortisol because it means that you have produced so much that there is no more to produce. You have fatigued, quote unquote, your adrenal glands, and now you have adrenal fatigue. I had a high cortisol, like sky high cortisol. And that, I think like the normal range was up to like 18, and I had like 27. Just insane cortisol levels. And that actually, in a weird way, is kind of a good thing, perhaps, because it means I haven't gotten to that point where I just don't have any cortisol.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't gotten to the point where I truly have fatigue. I caught it early enough. And maybe the hypoglycemia revealing itself was a blessing in disguise. Because I'll tell you what, when you hear the recollections of people who have gone through full-blown adrenal fatigue and not having any cortisol, that is brutal. I mean, that's, you can't get out of bed. It's just a necessary function of your body is just non-functional. You know, it's just, it's a nightmare. Yeah. So, and you're hypoglycemic all the time. You know, that's very, ugh, I can't even bring my brain to think of these things. But yes, my solutions, ironically enough, were almost entirely based in lifestyle. Going to bed at the same time every night.
Yeah.
Waking up at the same time every night, every day. Significantly increasing my exercise output. And I hate to say it, but a big thing was just acknowledging that I think there are people who work in the fitness industry and are able to work out. We talked about this with Joey a little bit. There are people who work at a gym and are able to get in their workouts at the gym that they work at.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people. Like, I just can't do it anymore. And I hate to say it, but I mean, cortisol. You're talking about it again, right? You walk into your place of work, inevitably there's going to be a cortisol uptake. It doesn't matter if you have the greatest job in the world. You know, inevitably you are going to...
Suddenly, stress is upon you.
Yes. And now you're asking you to stress yourself more by exercising.
Yeah.
It was just a disastrous...
And not to mention that you were also had reached a point where you weren't exercising.
Yes.
So you were even more so jacking up your cortisol levels because you don't have that release.
Yes.
So you're just pouring more on, like literally you just like blocked the fire exit and everybody's like,
I was using cortisol to put out a cortisol fire.
Yeah.
It was like dumping grease on a grease fire.
Yeah.
That's essentially what I was doing. But man, I still don't fully feel like there's still like some weird days in there where I don't feel 100%, but I'm
definitely still figuring it out. And it's only been like a week at this point.
Yeah, a week or two. And you know, it took a while to fuck myself up. So it's going to take a while to fix myself, but I absolutely.
And the Eagles won the Super Bowl just for you to chill out a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just one less thing to be worried about.
Thank you, Eagles. But, yeah, I feel a lot better, man. It just makes us so aware of, I hate to say this, but the longer I'm within the field of personal training, the more I realize that it probably is the least important. Now, I shouldn't say that because not exercising was a big problem for me.
Yeah.
But it kind of should be like the first training session you ever have should be basically someone saying like, all right, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a workout plan. But before we even get started with that, we're going to have you go to bed every night at 9:30 or 10 o'clock for a week straight.
Yeah.
And then you're going to wake up at 6 or 6:30. You're going to get a full 8.5 hours of sleep and you're not going to get up to an alarm. You're going to get a full restful night's sleep. You're going to do that for 5 days. The next week, you're going to eat a big breakfast. You're going to have a protein and fat dominant breakfast, and you may not be hungry for it. It may not be something that you want, but you still fucking need it. So you're going to do that on week number two. Then on week three, you're going to start stretching once per day just to work on your range of motion. And then by the fourth week, you're like, all right, now let's talk about barbells.
You know how hard it is to get people to buy that? You know how hard a sell that's going to be? Not that I disagree with the importance of those factors, but again, I think it really does come down to lifestyle.
Yes.
And that, like, we don't... While that is, like, our ideal circumstances, like, we don't live in that kind of vacuum to allow us that. Somebody's... getting assaulted on a scooter outside right now.
Is that what's happening?
I can only imagine with that fucking hunk. I have no idea what that was. But like, humanity has gone through so many different phases. Like, the 8-hour sleep schedule is a relatively new concept. Like that was an old, like in colonial times, people used to just like wake up at midnight and like hang out for a couple hours.
Yeah.
Like that's why like you would dress up for bed, because when you wake up in like 3 hours.
You
want to
be presentable.
Yeah. Because you got fucking to do or a snack to eat, whatever the case may be. Maybe there's, you got to check on the chickens.
Well, I've read a lot about that actually. Aren't there a lot of like tribal cultures that would only have sex like in the middle of the night?
Like, yeah, no.
They would wake up at like, they would go to bed early when the sun goes down. So they'd go to bed at like 8, 9 o'clock. Then they'd wake up at like midnight, 1 in the morning, have sex, then go back to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I've done that. But like, it's really hard to say that the whole like circadian rhythm thing. I think a case is made for the way like the current model of society, and with the kind of 9-to-5 structure that we put ourselves through, 8 hours of sleep is optimal because that's the only chance you're going to get to sleep.
Yeah.
Like that's where, but for people who work in bars, people who work overnights in hospitals, things like that, do they get 8 hours of sleep? Are
no,
they able to? Is that going to benefit them necessarily?
I would say 1,000% yes. I mean, the amount of health problems that these service members or shift work people have is profound. You know, like Rob Wolf is a guy who I've learned a lot from in terms of diet and lifestyle, and that's all he does actually. Is his day job. He makes a lot of money from books and seminars and all these things, but he actually works at a clinic where they work on people who do shift work, because for some of these people, there's just no helping them. You know, they could eat a perfect paleo diet. They could eat a perfect Whole30 diet. But if you're awake when you're supposed to be asleep and asleep when you're supposed to be awake, man, you're fighting a losing battle. You know, it's just, there is a circadian rhythm. Like even, you know, when I was researching, trying to get back on schedule for myself, like there are certain times, I think about bowel movements, right? You don't have them at certain times. You have them at other times. Like when's the last, if you wake up in the middle of the night, let's say, you know, you go to bed at a somewhat normal societal time, 9:30, 10 o'clock. If you have to wake up to take a dump, something is wrong, because you're not supposed to be taking a dump at 3 in the morning. Something is wrong. You probably have food poisoning or stomach ailment of some sort. You know, like your body literally will suppress certain functions of your body at particular times according to that biological clock in circadian rhythm. And, you know, I can't say that I've done a ton of research to say that shift workers and overnight folks, you know, I'm not a clinician. I'm not a researcher. So I haven't done that research. But those who I learn from that have are all very clear that it is disastrous to your health. So, and you know, some people are able to get away with it. There's always going to be an exception to the rule. I sure as fuck wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was a big problem for me, is going to bed at just completely unrealistic times. And then that's a snowball effect. That's actually one of the things you learn about waking up early in the morning. Like I wake up every day now at 6:30. And I've gotten used to it, and you know, starting to get tired at the right times. My body is shifting its focus. But one of the things that you really start to learn is that it is a keystone habit. It's not necessarily that going to bed at 9:30 is optimal. You know, if you go to bed at midnight and wake up at 8, now again, going to bed at 2:30 is sort of objectively not an ideal situation.
No.
Especially, here's another thing, is the repetition of it, right? If you go to bed at 9:30 on Thursday, but 2:30 on Friday, that's bad. Like, your body does like patterns to some degree.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I've found is all of a sudden, if you do get up early, if you have that same routine, you get to build habits. And when your schedule is so variable and so shifting and so changing, you don't get the opportunity to build habits.
And you get beat to death by a scooter.
Yes, I don't know what this problem is. I think this gentleman received this scooter and is trying to like show it off to someone. Like he's either that, or we have like a West Side Story type of situation brewing outside.
Yeah,
of my apartment.
They're about to fight in the streets. And
what's
sing
that movie
about
where the all the like ninjas on motorcycles surround this guy, and all stab him with swords?
I don't know, but it sounds fucking awesome.
Also, how many times is he going to go around the block?
I think he's... Oh, yeah, no, because he was further down. Now he's back. Maybe he just, like, turned around.
Maybe.
Like, you know, scooters, their ability to follow the rules of the road is a bit different. They can play
fast. The scooter is a mobile transportation device. Coaching the lifts.
The lifts.
I can't wait for that. We should absolutely make that our...
That's not a bad place
to start.
We got to
get me some Herpeto garb.
Yes. You need like a...
A tight-fitting polo shirt?
Yes.
And cargo pants.
Cargo sweatpants.
Yeah.
You need that like mid-boob fucking sweat gland thing going on. Like,
and like
right above your fucking belly.
On like postman shoes.
Some New Balances.
But yeah, man, circadian rhythms to wrap that. Put a bow on that bad boy. Yeah. I have been convinced that they matter and that they matter greatly.
Yeah.
But anywho, that's an hour.
I have yet to be convinced.
Yet. Although, who knows?
Our schedules aren't the same. Like, we're on different.
Yeah.
Yeah, sides of these things. Also, like, I haven't had cortisol fucking overdose try to kill me at some point in my life.
Do you know that for sure?
I mean, I haven't undergone any of the circumstances that you've described.
But even, like, you know, if you've had certain issues in your life that, you know, be it mental, physical, like,
yeah,
you know, one system's connected to another.
And that, but that's again where like that kind of tangled web comes to
the snowball effect.
Like,
yeah.
Where did it start?
Yes.
What's feeding into what? Like, now I'm also of the opinion that yes, you should try to get up earlier.
Yes.
Like, you shouldn't sleep it. Like, I've set a lot, like, I don't sleep past 9 on the weekends and I don't sleep past 6:30 in the mornings, like during the week. That being said, like, I don't get a full 8 hours of sleep every night.
Yeah.
Now I try to get at least, now I realize where my cut, like, I can't function with less than 6.
I think
that doesn't work out too well.
I think one of the key parts of aging is sort of beginning to understand your recipe.
Yeah.
Of how you work as a human being. Like, I am a person who is a hyperanalyzer.
Yeah.
And I ruminate. Jordan Peterson uses the word ruminate a lot, but I am most certainly a ruminator. And you strike me as someone who is not to the same degree. Like, you are a little bit more laid back as a guy. Like, I see Rick, and you're just you're more jovial.
Sometimes it's like a spiteful jovialness. Like,
you're
happy in spite of everything.
You're also peaks and valleys, right?
Yeah.
I'm always a little bit more down the middle.
Yeah.
And
then that's where your like crash starts to happen.
Yeah.
Because you get hit that gradual slow.
I only ever move in one direction.
Yeah.
You're moving in both directions very frequently.
Yeah.
I am just boom. And if it's trending down, we're going down, baby.
Yeah.
If we're trending up, wow, we're going up.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe we both have peaks and valleys, but yours are very sharp. Yours looks like a wave. Mine almost looks like a bunch of, you know, distended triangles.
Yeah, no, because that's probably like my, like I would say I probably go to bed about midnight during the week pretty much every night. But when I'm working bar shifts, I'm up till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Get up at 9, but I might take a nap at 4.
Yeah.
Like, I still somehow I'm like kind of leveling out.
Well, so too,
it's craziness happens.
How you process stress, how you process, you know, different things. If you are a hyperanalyzer like myself, you're probably somebody who's going to have to really look out for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you can very easily fall, but we all know somebody who's kind of able to just brush stuff off.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, I obsess over my credit score, you know? You don't even have one.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't bother you. It doesn't bug you. Like, that would...
It does when I think about it. That's why I just don't think about it.
Well, that's a gift. It's a gift to be able to say, I'm not going to think about this thing.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
Yeah.
It's just, it's here. And it's literally like, it's almost like saying, like, don't look at the thing that's directly in front of your face.
Yeah.
And then I try to look in the other way, but it's just attached to my face.
Yes, it's just constantly right there.
Yes, yeah. I don't have the ability to bat it away.
No, I've found myself, like, I can very easily fall into the trap of obsession when it comes to things like that. And that's why I kind of try to, like, that what you described as the jovialness. I realize that I need to be this way. Otherwise, I'm going to be stuck in a hole.
Yes.
Like, I need to jump up into the clouds and Icarus my way towards the sun, or I'm going to crash down and get stuck.
Well, I think another big thing is, you know, just like we were talking about finding your recipe as a human being. I lost my train of thought. Fuck. I yawned, and then it left me with
your
the
circadian
exhale.
Rhythm is winding down.
It really is. I'm yawning like a motherfucker. But anyways, that is an hour and 10 minutes.
That's pretty good.
You want to put a button on it? Put a bow on it?
I guess we can keep a little short and sweet one this week.
Yeah.
If you guys have any ideas of things you would like us to do on our soon-to-be featured YouTube channel,
yes,
please comment or email us at whitebeltsinlife@gmail.com or contact us on any of our social media platforms, all the ones except Snapchat, because fuck that Snapchat shit.
I don't understand Snapchat, man.
I don't even enjoy
the idea of it. Like, here's a brief snippet of things.
It's a very pretentious social media app, I feel. Like, I don't want you to take a picture of what you're doing right now and send it to me. It's obnoxious. Like, when I'm working the bar and I see people Snapchatting, they're, ooh, look at me, I'm drinking a Bud Light. Like, no one cares.
People need to be the...
No one wants to know.
I was talking or listening to a podcast recently that talked about how one of the main problems of society and why there are a lot of unhappy people within it is that a lot of values have become, and a lot of motivation has become sort of external as opposed to internal. You know, you're doing the things that you're doing because you want to see the effects it has on other people.
Yeah.
Not necessarily yourself. But I think that that's a tricky situation because for me, a hyperanalyzer, if I really start to sit down and what do I want, that is a tricky, tricky and dangerous game to ask me to play.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to analyze it to the point where nothing makes sense and I won't do anything. So at some point, doing things because, you know, losing weight because you want to look better for your girlfriend or going to jiu-jitsu class because you want to tap out your friend who goes.
Yeah.
I don't think that is the worst thing in the world.
No, I think in a way it especially if you're not a kind of the opposite of a selfish person, but like somebody who doesn't want to be selfish, someone who's a little bit more selfless in their pursuits, I think it's a good way to keep yourself motivated.
And also too, you know, are you doing it for the right reasons? Like, are you doing it because you really do want to create good content that is going to benefit those who listen to it, or are you doing it just because if you're doing it simply for a paycheck? I mean, this is not breaking news sort of shit here, but like,
yeah,
I think when people say that, they usually think that like, oh, I'm going to do this because fuck my ex-boyfriend, or I don't think that's
a bad reason.
Spite's a bad reason, but at the same time, I think what's really bad is doing it. I don't think being motivated by other people is a bad thing unless what you are trying to do in and of itself is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you are going to, or if you're in business and you're going to sacrifice your ethics to, you know, just be as successful as possible because I want to say fuck you to that guy, blah, 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 then yes, that is terrible motivation. But if you only ever rely, that is a fat, you know, one-way track to crazy town, just constantly analyzing, like, do I really want this? Yeah. Is this for me? I don't know. That scares me. As a hyper-analyzer, maybe for someone like yourself, who isn't as quite a ruminator as I am and is able to kind of just take things, think about them, get what you need out of it, and discard.
Yeah.
Perhaps you could be that guy who only ever focuses on internal motivation patterns, but my God, I don't. That scares me.
I definitely do need a certain degree of, like, I'm doing this for you. Even, like, especially with, like, clients. Like, there's it becomes this weird kind of game of, like, I'm doing this for your own good, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
Like, I'm doing this because it will keep your body from falling apart in old age. And you may not enjoy this workout, but it's what you need to be doing.
Perfect example. I'm right before we sign off here, I'm wondering why I'm yawning, right?
Yeah.
So my old bedtime was, let's say, 1:30. That was a very common time for me to go to bed. Let's say it was 1:30. I wake up every morning at 6:30. It's currently 5:30. So if I went to bed at 1:30, I'd probably wake up at 9:30, 10. So that means that right now it is essentially, let's say I woke up at 10. So if I woke up at 10, 11 hours after that would be 9. So it's essentially 9 o'clock right now. I don't understand.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense. I'm yawning too. It's contagious.
Well,
I got up at 6:30, but I didn't get to sleep until 2. So that makes a little bit more sense in my case.
Ricky needs some shut eye.
Yes, he does. That's pretty
good. Well, we're going to give it to him, White Belts in Life Nation.
You guys are the best.
You guys, whoever you are, you don't send us any emails, but God damn it, whoever the fuck you are, we love you.
Yes, we do.
Until next time, which will be next Wednesday, because I'm going to post this by tomorrow.
Hell yeah.
So this will go up a Wednesday the 14th, and then we'll hit you with another one on next Wednesday the 21st. White Belt Wednesdays are back, motherfuckers. All right. Cue the outro music.
Godspeed.
Godspeed.